This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, from Brave New World to The Hunger Games, how dystopian novels portray the fear authoritarian governments have of books and knowledge. First up today, Louder Than a Bomb, the world's largest poetry slam, started in Chicago in 2001. It's now expanded to 15 cities, including Cincinnati. The event serves as a forum for our city's youth to engage one another and an opportunity for the rest of us to hear about life in Cincinnati from their perspectives. Louder Than a Bomb Cincinnati is phase two of the 2013 Future Cities Livable Cities Symposium. Joining us to discuss Louder Than a Bomb and the Future Cities Initiative, our University of Cincinnati Chair of Taft Faculty and Director of the Charles Phelps Taft Research Center, Dr. Adrian Parr, and Terry Bowling, Architect and Associate Professor of Practice at the UC College of Design, Architecture, Art, and Planning. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Adrian and Terry, tell me, how did each of you become involved with Louder Than a Bomb? Adrian?
When I came in as the director of the Taft Research Center 2 years ago, one of the primary goals that I had was to try to raise the profile of the center and to raise it within the local community as well as nationally and internationally. And I have a long-standing interest in public humanities initiatives, the ways in which we can use the humanities like a toolkit for civic engagement. And when I'd heard about Louder Than a Bomb after visiting Chicago about a year and a half ago, I thought that that was the perfect kind of platform for a public humanities initiative that could come out of a humanities research center like the Taft Research Center. And so I went about looking into the ways in which we could bring it here to Cincinnati, and it sort of grew from there.
Terry, how did you become involved?
Well, the School of Architecture and Interior Design at UC, we have a program called MetroLab, which is basically a vehicle for students to work out in the community. And Adrian asked us to get involved. We've done a few projects here in town, and really happy to be involved in it.
Adrian, what are the ages for the competitors?
So students from 13 to 19 years of age inclusively can be involved in this. And we have schools from across the city that have teams that they've been working with over the past 10 months or so. Some of those schools are public schools like Hughes High School, Aitken High, SCPA, Walnut Hills High School. We've got private schools like Seven Hills, which has also made it into the finals. Cristo del Por Rey is another one. So we've had different mentors, teachers from those schools and mentors from out in the community working with that age group for approximately a year now.
Mentoring is a big part of this, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Very important aspect of the whole program.
Yeah, it is. I mean, one of the things in terms of this being a public humanities initiative, it's encouraging students to be interested in reading and writing again. Right? Because they're basically writing poems based on their own experiences. And they're writing poems that they then get up and perform. And so they're developing skills of public speaking. So each step along the way, the mentor is a kind of crucial component in this. So, for example, Jory from Elements has been working really, really closely with several of the young people from different schools, as has Desiree. And she's at Wordplay over in Northside. They've also been working with students from, say, Aitken High School, and Manuel Iris, who's actually a former student from McMicken College of Arts and Sciences at UC and was actually previously one of the graduate assistants at the Taft Research Center and a poet. So he's been working with students out of Cristo del Por Rey. Eric from Seven Hills has been working closely with his team. So there's a lot of kind of follow-up and rehearsals that are required, getting students comfortable, standing up in public, sharing their experiences, which are often very intimate experiences, challenges that they're facing. And so a good, strong, healthy relationship with a mentor is crucial.
Terry, have any idea how many schools were involved in this? How many students you had participate?
Well, I have a studio that's 16 undergraduate students as part of a capstone design studio. So We've been working very closely with Adrian and Elements and Wordplay to get involved with the students early on, meaning the poet students. So we've actually gone to several of the high schools to watch performances and watch their practices, and really getting trying to get a handle of what we're actually doing, because we're basically designing and building the context for the event to take place. So we're thinking about the environment in which the performer is performing. And, you know, from the very beginning, it was kind of a shock, because the fact is it's very minimalist. I mean, all they need is a microphone and a stage. And here we are trying to work with them and to design an environment that supplements and adds to their performance, but doesn't take away anything from it. We didn't want to get in the way.
So you had, safe to say, dozens of schools, hundreds of students who were involved in this?
Hundreds of students, yeah. I don't think it would be dozens of schools yet. I think by the time we get to next year, we'll be at that point, because we've already had other schools reach out now and say, what is this louder than a bomb thing? Because young people are getting very interested in it. One of the things that I'd like to add, why this is different to, there's another poetry competition nationally, mm-hmm. Where students are assigned poems that they can learn, and then they get up and they speak them publicly. And that's the format for that competition. And the reason why we chose, I chose Louder Than a Bomb for the TAF Research Center initiative, was speaking to folks in Chicago, which is where Louder Than a Bomb came out of 15 years ago. They explained that the Louder Than a Bomb initiative has gained much more traction, much more quickly with young people, because of one difference. They're writing poems based on their own experiences. They're not learning the poems of other folks. But they then, their interest in poetry in a more broader sense is also roused. So it has this sort of trickle down effect, where they do become more interested in the poetic form, but it's, through the platform, or from the platform of their own experiences.
Now, Louder Than a Bomb started in Chicago, you're saying 15 years ago, so about 2001. What were the things that were going on at that time that led to the creation of this contest?
So that was one of the other reasons why I wanted it to come to Sydney, Cincinnati. Sydney, that's a slip of the tongue. That's where I was originally born, to Cincinnati, and as a second phase of Future Cities, Livable Futures. Because Chicago was undergoing some real difficulties, especially in the south side and in some of the sort of western parts of Chicago, with a city being socially and economically divided and polarized. And obviously there's lots of tensions socially that emerge around those sorts of skewed socioeconomic relations. And an increasingly underfunded education system. Riots, gangs, all kinds of things like that were taking place. And this was an initiative to try to provide young people with a voice as a way for them to become more empowered. And by sharing some of the difficulties and challenges that they were having to deal with on a daily basis, they found that this was one way of creating a platform that would produce more diversity across the city. You bring different constituencies into relationship with one another. Kids from different parts of the city come to know one another and share their experiences, and a sort of common ground emerges naturally, holistically, as a result of that. And it's now gone on to become one of the major calendar events in Chicago. I was recently there for the Indy finals. So they have to divide their competition up into the Indies and the teams on two very different events, because they have so many kids participating in this, and it was electrifying. There were over 1,000 kids in the audience for the Indies, and for the teams, they're anticipating just over 4,000 people attending that particular event.
Well, let's listen to one of the participants. This is Asylum, who performed at the semifinals on March 14th.
Brothers and sisters, I don't think y'all hearing me. I said I got a problem, right? The very thought of her constantly keeps me up at night, to the point that the walls that I stare at morph into an endless black hole, and I know that they once were white. And in my mind, God himself is hell-bent on prolonging my dreadful plight. And every time that I think of her, my body is rocking and shaking, and my heart is racing at the same rate that hers is breaking, and it just appears to be no end in sight. I am broken.
Boy, let's go.
Because you see, whenever I think of how things could have been between us, I just disappear into this magical garden isolated from time and space. And I'm sitting there perfectly content. And I'm just holding your hand with this big stupid smile on my face. Because you see, whenever I think about these things, I just fade into inexplicable joy. Whenever I think about the wonderful relationship that could have happened between you and me, and in my mind, everyone else is gone, and we're just together in everlasting peace and unity.
Yeah, that's really good. That's something that a lot of teenagers can relate to, getting in an argument with a boyfriend or a girlfriend. He's got a lot of passion in how he's delivering this.
Most definitely. And that's one of the striking features, I think, that's shared right across the board, isn't it, Terry? The kind of passion that comes to the stage as these young kids get up and share their stories.
And it's surprisingly all positive. This is the most amazing thing. Even though they're talking about things that are very personal and in some cases heart-wrenching, it's very, very positive. And the students all feel, every one of them leaves the stage with a smile on their face. It's absolutely amazing.
And the kind of tone that's happening across the audience, because people, as you could hear even from that little snippet, there's a lot of backwards and forwards where the audience is kind of responding to the performer, right?
So, well, it's a relatable feeling. It's a lot. Yeah. It's something a lot of people have been through.
And it creates this community that expands beyond the stage. So it's really performance art. It's not theater in that way. Like and this is a sort of a design thing that we talked about early on. The stage that's framed up there is broken. That frame is broken, and it's actually an entire event that moves into the audience, because the audience is contributing a sort of dialogue as people are performing.
Like you were saying earlier, Terry, it's very minimalist, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, we were so careful about not being too aggressive with whatever we were doing as the environment, and keeping everything in the background, but also keeping it very highly crafted and very highly designed and articulated if you look closely. So, a lot of the students came up afterwards and were very complimentary and thankful for the environment that they actually didn't anticipate, right? They didn't really know what we were going to do. They didn't expect anything. So everything that was there was kind of a surprise in some way. So
and the exhibition that you're doing is amazing, where you've been getting quotes from, handwritten quotes from some of the young writers, and then etching them into plates.
Yeah, we started collecting lines of poetry from all the students, and then we found a way to etch them into acrylic with a laser cutter. And then we also are etching the same lines in the students' own handwriting onto handmade paper. So we're including those in an exhibition so the students can actually see their handwritten work on display, as well as this very beautiful edge-lit acrylic with the laser etched words on it. So it's really something that they didn't expect, I think. Mm. And it's a way to kind of share that with the students.
Well, it's sort of interesting in a way, because this is so much about the spoken word format, and getting them to write things down was a big challenge. And now that they're looking at their own handwritten kind of piece as an object out there in space, that's produced a very sort of interesting response. So many of them were deeply moved by that, and they've come forward and asked, can we take that home as a sort of memory keeper of this particular experience that we've gone through over the past 10 months?
Yeah, so we're going to absolutely give them that back. So we're going to produce a lot more of these small, basically Packards, plackets for the pieces that have their handwritten lines on them that are burned with the laser. So you see the very intricate line of their words, but you also see this burn that is a result of the paper burning. So it's really quite beautiful and handmade.
It sounds like it. We will continue our conversation about Louder Than a Bomb, and you can join us at 513-4... This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking about Louder Than a Bomb, the world's largest poetry slam. The local finals are coming up in Cincinnati April 18th. My guests are University of Cincinnati Chair of Taft Faculty and Director of the Charles Phelps Taft Research Center, Dr. Adrian Parr, and Terry Bowling, Architect and Associate Professor of Practice at the UC College of Design, Architecture, Art, and Planning. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Adrian, why Cincinnati for Louder Than a Bomb? Why is it a good fit?
One of the things that came out of the Future Cities Livable Futures event was that some of the biggest challenges that Cincinnati faces moving forward is the socioeconomic divisions that separate certain constituencies from other constituencies. And the second one was the high rate of child poverty in the city. And then educational outcomes, which are improving, graduation rates, for example, with high school. But we still have a long way to go. And I felt that this particular format was something that touched upon all those issues in a very direct way, because you get different constituencies of young people from across the city, from very different backgrounds, coming together, sharing their experiences and getting to know one another over the course of 10 months. So it automatically is something that creates this platform for diversity to occur, and understanding. And it's young people, so it's giving them a voice and empowering them. And it's also sparking their interest in learning again, because they're becoming passionate about reading and writing and exploring language, pushing narrative to the limit, performing their stories. So these are all sort of educational outcomes, I think, that are very, very positive.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. And let's talk with Giselle in Oak Hills. Good afternoon. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, is it me?
Yes, it's you.
Can you hear me? Oh, hi. Hi. Well, I had a comment, appreciative comment, and a question. So, the first thing is my son is actually, this is just so great. I'm so excited right now. Just, and I came in a little late on the conversation, so I'm just, can't even believe how exciting this is. He's actually starting for his Capstone Senior Project, a, spoken word, like, extracurricular club. And so he's, I think he's been in touch with Desiree. Is it Wordplay in Northside?
That's mm-hmm. right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so she's working with him a little bit, but like, so it's just getting started. And, you know, it's a senior project. So he's, you know, got a lot to do. And then someone has to take over for it next year. And he kind of comes back and oversees. It's so exciting.
Oh, this is fabulous.
I know. You guys are amazing. And you are so right. As far as, the expressiveness of it. He had an experience. What got him loving this is he was in a fine arts group for our church, and one of the one of the formats for it's like a competition. There's all different kinds of visual arts, just different kinds of arts, and it is actually a national competition. He actually got ninth place for his spoken word.
Fabulous.
But the crazy part is that he was going through a really, really, he's a really sweet kid and, I mean, an amazing kid, just an amazing, wonderful hearted person. But he was going through this angry thing where he like, you know, I hope he doesn't hear he's going to be mad at me, but, you know, punched a couple walls here and there and, you know, he's a teenage boy, like he's, I think he's
that happens. Yeah, that happens.
You can speak to that, Mark. Huh?
Yep.
So he did this related to that. And can I just tell you that it was literally therapy. It was, he wrote it, you know, and it's inspired because you can see it's like coming out of, like when he wrote it in one sitting mm-hmm. on one piece of paper. And you're right. That piece of paper is special. And I love that etching idea that you have an actual, like a beautiful remembrance of it, because it doesn't only move you. It moves other people that, you know, come into your path. And I do feel like, you know, like the universe pulls in all those people that need to hear it at that time. It's just such an amazing community building thing. But literally, he cured himself of this anger, like after he performed it.
That's
like
amazing.
He just let it go.
So very, very
it
therapeutic.
Was so fantastic.
That's
yeah,
great to hear.
Totally.
Did you have a question you wanted to ask?
Oh, I did. Thank you. Well, I just wanted to find out. It's April 18th. I was going to see. Can anyone come to this? Because I was going to see.
Anyone can come.
Group that's starting it, so they could get this amazing experience. I can't believe it's happening. Like.
Anyone can come. So all you have to do is log on to the website and register. You can register two people at a time. So if you have a whole group, just register for them. It's free and open to the public, and it's being held at the Freedom Center at 5 o'clock on Saturday, April 18th. And we would love to see you. And please do come up and introduce yourself to me if you do come. I would love to meet you.
And thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. And you'll also find links about the show at WVXU.org. And let's hear another one of the semifinalists from March the 14th. This is Mitchell.
So now that I, the Jew, stand before you, the Arab, to hear the words Ein Yeshus Zatomea thrown in my face, I know exactly what to expect. I know exactly who you are. No, I know exactly what you are. You're an Arab. How dare you hate me, you anti-Semite? You have no right, despite all of your ludicrous bigotry packed tight beneath ludicrous bigotry. You still hate me. All of your violence, and again I stand in silence to hear the words Ein Yeshus Zatomea. But then, something must have gotten lost in translation, because then I learned what Ein Yeshus Zatomea really means. Where is your water bottle? You're going to get dehydrated. Where is your water bottle? You're going to get dehydrated? That man was no beast, that Arab no hound. He was just a man overcome with compassion, and me just a man overcome with a passion.
Did Mitch actually write this?
Yes.
My gosh.
It's incredible.
That's just incredibly creative. And the depth is amazing, too.
There's this incredible, I mean, as we heard it right then and there, this turning point. And it speaks volumes for the day and age that we're living in today. And I think the sort of the honesty and the courage that he's brought to the writing of that piece as a young Jewish man, that speaks volumes.
What's even more amazing for me is we were actually out there at Seven Hill School watching a practice. He did a completely different poem, flawlessly and beautifully, about a month ago. And so he came with a brand new poem and again performed it so convincingly. It was just amazing.
Mm. Yeah, because of rap's influence, is this medium of expression familiar to kids these days? Were they comfortable getting up and performing because they're a little more familiar with this?
I do think there is that. And I think, though, what you get also with rap is that the texture and rhythm of language is really capitalized upon. And so kids are able to, they move to the words naturally when they're writing in this particular, in the sort of spoken word format, and given that it's very much influenced by rap and hip hop culture. So I think they come naturally to it, but I think the medium itself is much more accessible. It's very everyday. It's very tangible. It's very corporeal, in many respects. And so therefore, that makes it the perfect medium for young people to be expressing themselves.
Now, we've only had a few examples, but I've heard no vulgarity. Was that one of the rules, or did some kids get a bit rough with their language?
No, there are rules like that in place, and the idea is not to censor young people, but it's really to encourage them to explore language as much as possible and all the different variants of language, and to move into new terrain with language. So we didn't want people just getting up and doing a piece that was just all swearing, right? Mm-hmm. That they were encouraged to explore language in all its richness and diversity and its color and texture and rhythm. And these are the sorts of things you learn when you're also learning to be a writer and to write poetry and to do creative writing.
Let's hear the final example we have, and this is Sophia.
I know the time of day by the pill I'm taking. My pockets are heavy with Ziploc bags containing narcotics and controlled amounts. The days of the week are held apart by doctor's appointments and therapy sessions that I'm not even sure I need. I am tired of apologizing for myself just to fill the empty space when there is nothing else to say. My voice is jagged along the edges because of my rough cut design, which I'm only learning was left unfinished because perfection is a mountaintop and there is nowhere to go from there but down. We stretch our hands to the streams of light, breaking apart the clouds, hoping maybe our fingers can plug up the empty parts. But there are so many questions I'm afraid to ask.
Again, I'm just amazed by the depth of what these kids are saying.
Mm.
I mean, it's wonderful.
It's incredibly honest. And to go back to the person who called in, the therapeutic dimension of that, I think is a really important point that she raises, because therapy is about – being able to put your experiences or any difficulties that you've encountered in your life into words, and to process those experiences and the challenges that they've raised for you by speaking about them. And so this is another way that that takes place. And with, they've got a really supportive community along the way with other young people who are going through similar kinds of problems. It was, what was really interesting was the shared themes that sort of emerge of love, of anger, of hope, of dashed dreams, of insecurities. You know, we can all remember back to when we were a teenager. It's terribly troubling a lot of the time. Where are you going to go? How are you going to find your path? All the stresses and strains that are being placed upon you. And then, of course, today, with a lot of young kids, they've got these added burdens of, you know, socioeconomic difficulties and other sorts of things that they're encountering, thrown into the mix just to make it all that much more difficult. So this is very much a very supportive community for a lot of young people that get involved.
Yeah, I think the community part is the most striking to me. And I was so surprised when I experienced that, is that, you know, it's hard enough to write something, but to get up and perform it in front of strangers is an added, you know, huge challenge, I think, for me personally. I can't even imagine doing that. But one of the things that was so cool about the actual performance is when someone is stuck, and it happens often, you know, when someone just can't get the words out, the audience starts doing this. They start snapping. And I think this is from the Chicago Louder Than a Bomb.
And also beat poets used to do that.
Beat poets, yeah. But it's beautiful because this, they then stop and they gather themselves and then they continue on with the poem. And they know that everybody's supporting them. It's really quite amazing.
Well, I also think of it when I hear that, I think of when I'm trying to remember something, sometimes I'll go, let's see, what was it? And I'll snap my fingers and then it comes back. So they're helping them along. That's incredible.
And now, they interject with, you know, comments like, you got it, girl. You got it. Come on. You got it. And then in Chicago, because they show the actual scores, we don't show the scores. I mean, and shout the scores out, but they scream out, you know, listen to the poem. Listen to the poem. They say to the judges, you know, if they don't agree with the score, they think it's too low. It should be higher.
Who's judging the contest?
We have some poets from across the city who are coming in. I have the names somewhere. I could look those up. I can't remember off the top of my head.
That's okay.
Yeah. And we're very lucky. We've had a fabulous slew of sponsors. Kroger has come forward and is one of the main sponsors. UC Diversity Office, UCRI, McMicken College of Arts and Sciences has also been sponsoring it. So we've it's really a community venture, this one. Yeah.
You got any feedback from parents who attended?
Austin's mum is thrilled with how, I mean, Austin's one of the other young folk that got through to the finals, and he'll be appearing at a news broadcast with me on Sunday morning. And they've talked about what a positive influence this has been on their kids' lives. So, yeah.
And you've got plans for coming back next year?
Most definitely. Yep. Okay. We'll be here next year.
Do you know the date yet, Adrian?
No, it'll be sometime around the same time. Spring. In April. Yeah. Okay.
Very good. Well, Adrian and Terry, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
University of Cincinnati Chair of Taft Faculty and Director of the Charles Phelps Taft Research Center, Dr. Adrian Parr, and Terry Bowling, Architect and Associate Professor of Practice at the UC College of Design, Architecture, Art, and Planning. Coming up, how dystopian novels highlight the fear authoritarian governments have of books and the power of knowledge. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.